Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler, my regular co-host, Steve Harmison. We've got another busy show in store. We'll reflect on the news that Moeen Ali has announced his retirement from Test cricket and ask what now for him and the England Test team. We'll also be joined by Warwickshire all-rounder Tim Bresnan to look back on their first county championship win since 2012. And me and Harmy will be selecting our county 11s of the season. Well, Harmy, we have to start with the great Moeen. He's called it a day at the age of 34. He's had enough of Test cricket. He leaves behind a wonderful, wonderful record. Just under 3,000 runs and 195 wickets in his 64 Test matches. He'll be remembered for lots of things. I don't know a single person. I don't know if there is a single person with a bad word to say about him. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree. He's been a fantastic servant for Red Bull cricket. He got messed about, didn't he? I feel personally, if I'm brutally honest, he got messed about a bit for a couple of years. Were they trying to find out whether he had the hunger to play Test match cricket or not? Which really disappointed me because I thought, you know, a fantastic character, fantastic cricketer, a great, no bad word I've ever heard anybody say against him. And somebody we'll miss. I think we'll miss him in Red Bull cricket. I fully understand where he's at, having retired for one day cricket in the middle of my career because I just had enough. I was exactly the same. I know exactly where he's at. I just had enough of playing one day cricket, travelling my backside around the world. Did I get messed about a bit? Was it my own doing? Probably. But at the end of the day, once your mind and your body and you don't feel as though you've got the appetite for that fight anymore, then you pack in. And I think Moeen has had that. And like I say, he's done some remarkable things for England in Test match cricket. Got to remember, he's not retired fully. It's just from the Red Bull game. And he will be sorely missed because not only is he a fantastic ambassador for the sort of Asian community trying to get them into playing cricket, he's actually a great ambassador for cricket in general and people in general who love the game because he plays with a smile on his face. You know, he's always looking to sort of entertain, whether it's with the ball or definitely with the bat. So I think he's a good role model for everybody in this country that loves the game of cricket. And like I said before, I think he'll be missed. He will be missed. We'll see a big hole in that England spin department because, you know, we are even more threadbare now.
Well, let's hear from Mo himself, who said that he realised during the summer's Test series against India that he'd had enough. He's been speaking to the ECB website.
I just felt like I was done, to be honest with you. It's a strange one. I was hoping to play the last one. So there was a couple of milestones I wanted to obviously try and get in this series. But then once that game got called off, I was happy and done.
Well, Harmy, do you think his success and the success of the Chennai Super Kings in the IPL, where he's obviously very highly valued, he's been batting at three there, they're on top of the table and they've qualified for the playoffs. Do you think that that played a role? I mean, obviously, the uncertainty about the Ashes and, well, the prevailing uncertainty about his role in the Test team over the course of 64 Test matches. Do you think that all contributed to his decision to go now?
Yeah, I think so. I think there'll be quite a few contributing factors. I heard him speak at length, and he did say that the COVID world has played a little part, just a small part. I think last winter was a horrific winter for him. He gets to sort of spend time on his own, quarantining when he gets to Sri Lanka, and then all the stuff that went with his winter, where he spent a lot of time in isolation. And I just think that might have been the final nail. Just again, you know what? We're coming up against Australia. We don't know what the situation is. We don't know what our quarantine rule is. We don't know where we're going to be going playing. I think that might have been just the final one that tipped the balance, because he is a fantastic white ball player. He will play a lot of games for England in white ball format and other franchises around the world. I fully expected that there was one or two going to come out and say, we're not going to Australia. But I didn't expect Moen to say, I'm retiring. But I did believe that Moen might have struggled to go away this winter because of what happened to him last year.
I've got a question for you. What do we think of players who stick to their role without an element of flexibility? If a batsman is asked to open the batting in exceptional circumstances and he says, no, I'm not opening the batting. I'm a four or a five. Or somebody who says, look, I'm a second spinner, really. And so, I don't want to play as the sole spinner. Do you know what I mean? They get a bit precious, don't they? I mean, the point about Mo is that he's batted everywhere from one to nine. He's played as the second spinner. He's played as the only spinner. He's done every single thing that's been asked of him in exceptional circumstances. You know, we need a number three. Mo will do it. Mo will do everything for us. I mean, do you think he should have been a bit less flexible?
No, that's just the character that Mo and Ali is. That's why I say he's not just a fantastic role model for the Asian community. He's a fantastic role model for everybody that loves our great game, because he will literally do anything the team wants. And I think the two or three years that he had where people were messing him about, I was perplexed by that, because I think for Moen, you had to involve him for me. You had to, pump his tyres up a little bit and make sure that you took pressure off him by telling him, you are one of our best 11 players. You are one of our, top, valued members of this unit. And I think the ECB at times went the other way, and that was something that I think might have frustrated Moen. But you're right. Whenever a job needed to be doing, Mo will do it. And that, I think after a while, I think sometimes as a character, you might just get sick of it, and you might get, hold on, I'm getting criticised because I'm batting at number three and I've just nicked off, or I'm getting bounced out in the Caribbean, or I'm not a number three. I'm a number seven, number eight, who can bowl. And I'm getting put into jobs where not nobody else will do it, but for the balance of the side, it's better if I do it. And I'm getting criticised for doing something that I personally would rather choose a different role in this group. But because I'm such a good team man, I'll do anything for my teammates. And that, I don't think, went back and forward. I think Mo gave everything he possibly could. And I'm not sure the ECB management hierarchy had the similar train of thought, the give and take that Moen did. So I can't speak highly enough of the kid. I think he's been a great ambassador for English cricket. Did it come as a surprise that he was going to retire? I think after the last winter, probably not, no.
All right, let's hear what England captain Joe Root had to say. He was understandably fulsome in his praise of the great Mo.
His career speaks for itself, what he's achieved. He's done some wonderful things in Test cricket. He's been one of the great, great guys to play alongside. I've thoroughly enjoyed sharing that dressing room with him. He's had so many wonderful memories on the field, off the field. I think at times has been underappreciated, and he'll be a huge loss. He's a great personality to have in and around the dressing room. He's a great brain for younger players to learn from and to feed off. I just wish him every success in everything he chooses to do from now. But hopefully there's a lot of cricket I can still get to play with him.
The point about the England Test team, Harmy, is that there's no heir apparent. I mean, they've had Don Best and Jack Leach, and they've looked at a couple of other spinners, but, who takes over?
That's the million-dollar question, especially in Australia. Somebody's going to have to go to Australia and bowl frontline spin on surfaces that won't turn, that will you know, go nicely onto the bat. And Australians will not be 22 yards away from them. We'll be about 18, knowing the pressure that this spinner is going to be under. So it's going to be a daunting task for anybody to come into it. Will England play a spinner and just go with someone like Joe Root bowling, which I think would put even more pressure on the England captain? Leach, Bess, they're the best we've got at this minute in time. So England have got to back them. But the one thing about, you know, Mo and Ali, it just shows you how good this guy is. And I don't think he was as appreciated as what he probably should have been in the last 4 or 5 years. It's going to be an interesting hole to fill, because I don't see a great option, or, you know, an option that I think, right, pick Jack Leach or pick Don Bess, and they're going to get me a 5 wickets, second innings, fourth innings of a test match to knock Australia over in an Ashes contest. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. But at this minute in time, I don't see it, because if they did, England would have come back to them. England would have had them in the India series rather than Mo and Ali, because I think a lot of the selection panel and possibly the management probably thought this decision would have was coming anyway. So to go back to Mo, and I think it just showed you how important Mo was, but how desperate England are when it comes to the spin department, that there's nobody else.
In a moment, I'm going to ask you for your highlight of Moeen's career. For me, it was the 10 wickets against South Africa, including a hat-trick at Lord's not single-handedly win a test match, but play the lead role in it. But while you think about that, let's get the take of former England spinner, our very own Gareth Batty. He's been speaking to TalkSport's Sam Ellard.
I think there are some pretty big questions need asking of the EC about how he has been treated throughout his test career. You know, he's in, he's out. He seems to be blamed for a lot of things that are just not right. The chap's played 64 games. I think it's 64 test matches. Best bat of 3,000 runs and almost 200 wickets. That's right up there for the role that he does, if not the biggest in the role that he does. I understand where he would feel it's at. You know, does he need all the scrutiny that he gets? Unfairly, I believe. But it's a great shame that a young man is turning his back on test cricket.
How do you think England should have used Mo and Ali? What should his role have been in the test team?
Well, he could have been the one that actually he would have balanced the team out. Like when Stokes doesn't play, it's a real problem for England, balancing the team out. We should have given Moeen that responsibility. At times, it may go up the order with the batting and his bowling becomes the first spinner behind four seamers when it might be green. And then the flip side may be, actually, you're going to be our main spinner when we go maybe to the subcontinent, and we might give you a little bit more breathing space and bat you down at, say, 7 or 8, like a Jadeja does or an Ashwin does. And actually understand we could have given him a pivotal role within Test cricket and actually got the most out of him. But look, it's easy to say sat behind a camera and not there and all this sort of a thing. But I feel it's a bit of a shame that he seems to have been sort of messed around and never really given a full role within the Test group.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bat's never made any secret of his admiration and affection in equal measure for Moeen. I remember that long interview he did when we were on tour in Sri Lanka a couple of years ago. Absolutely brilliant insights. So Harmy, what's your highlight? What's your Moeen Ali highlight?
I think there's quite a few. I think, you know, the smile on his face when he took that first catch at Lord's, when he dived in full length and just showed the enthusiasm he had for the game and the love for the game. He got 150 batting at number 7 or 8, I think it was. And when England, he was a counteract, bang, he came. But I think, I'm with you, I think the 10 wickets at Lord's, because there was a lot of pressure put on Moeen's bowling. Was he good enough? Was he up to it? Is he a frontline spinner? Is he a part-time spinner? We all knew what sort of batting the dangerous hitting he had. But when he got to get 10 wickets at Lord's, I think that's as highlight as you get. And I think that, again, is why we're going to miss him, because I don't think we've got many spinners up our sleeve who could actually go into a test match and you think, well, he can hold his own and potentially win a game for us.
And final point before we end this section. People will, perhaps people like me who haven't played at the highest level, make the mistake of thinking that test cricket becomes too hard after a while, and that playing white ball cricket is the easier option. And I know it's not that simple. It's not about the hardness of playing difficulties, the toughness required to play 5-day cricket. It's just different, isn't it? It's just different rather than harder or easier?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's, I think mentally it's challenging, but I think you're right. Test matches are, it's such a great game to play. I'm not saying it gets easier from it, because you learn how to manage it. So you know when you get to the test arena, you've got probably 8 days of just basically constant mental pressure, because you've got the 2 or 3 days before the build up, and then you've got the test match and what comes with that. And it's not as simple as saying, well, it's easier just playing white ball cricket, because it's 50 overs, its game is finished in a short space of time. They are different. We play this wonderful game that we all love, is played in so many different ways, and can be, you know, even with this new 100, it can be loved in so many different ways. But test match is the ultimate. I'm not saying it gets harder. I actually thought it got easier mentally, because I was used to turning up and playing. I wasn't as tired. I could get my emotions right in tune to get me through to end of day five. And that's a challenge for any young player that comes into the game. But one day cricket is, it just seems that white ball is where the power's going now, where the money's going now. And I think you'll find a lot of players thinking, right, why should I exert myself with all that Red Bull stuff when, you know, the pound and the dollar is in the white ball game? So I don't think Moen's going to be the first to say I've had enough, because I'm, the intensity in my heart's not there, and it's getting harder. And I don't think he'd be the last either around the corner. I think we might have a few more of these decisions that I'm going to go into white ball cricket and just sack red ball off.
The great fear is that if it happens more and more, that it happens younger and younger as well. And, you know, Mo's 34, you know, that we really will be in trouble if it starts to happen when players are 30 or 28. Now, Warwickshire won their first county championship title since 2012, after beating Somerset on a thrilling final day at Edgbaston. And we're delighted that Bears all-rounder Tim Bresnan took time off yesterday to talk to us on the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. Brezzy, can you sum up the difference between the Bears of a year ago, when you failed to win a single championship game, to becoming county champions? It's an incredible turnaround.
I think it is. Obviously, we didn't lose many games last year, but again, we didn't come that close to winning any. And I think it's just a belief that, you know, it's just one performance and then we were off. You know, one win kind of gives you the belief to think that you can win from anywhere. And, you know, we did that against Notts early on in the season, and then we beat Essex, and then we was on a bit of momentum from there.
Learning how to win is a very sports-specific, very cricket-specific phenomenon. And, you know, and unless you've played at first-class level, it's a difficult concept to understand, learning how to win. There's quite a few youngsters, and they would have all been looking to you, the senior player, and the other senior players, because you know how to win. So what kind of direction were you able to provide them?
I think it's just the calmness, really. When the pressure comes, there's always a pinch point in a game where, you know, you're under immense pressure, and it can come early. You know, say if you get into a little bit of trouble and you've got to get yourself out of it, that'll be an early pinch point, or it can come, you know, as the Somerset game did after lunch on day four. So I think it's just a calmness that you need to provide. It's a calmness that keep doing the basics well, keep doing the basics better than the other team, and we will come out on top.
It's the ultimate team, this Warwickshire County Champions, in the sense that you don't have anybody who was averaging 60 or taking 60 wickets. You know, in terms of contributions, it seemed that everybody had a really good game or a really good session at a critical time. But as I say, you know, as far as statistics and averages are concerned, there are no superstars.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what builds a strong team as well. The fact that you can sort of dovetail into, it's not just left to one person. You know, everyone at some point has stepped up throughout the year and can take massive confidence from that. And, you know, we've, as a bowling attack, we've hunted as a pack as well. You know, it would have been fantastic for someone to just, you know, get 80 poles or whatever, but, you know, that's not happened. But yeah, I mean, we've hunted as a pack. We've built pressure from both ends, and it doesn't matter who gets the wickets, and that's sort of a thing that we've all bought into together.
How did you get to the winning point? I'll go back to my time at Durham. We beat Kent we beat Kent and Notts were playing, I think, Hampshire. And we'd done our job. Were you keeping an eye on what was happening at Liverpool? Because we went through the Dartford Tunnel. And as we went into the Dartford Tunnel, Charlie Shrek hit one up in the air. We came out the Dartford Tunnel and we were now champions. We're now 6 hours away on a bus from home. That was my experience of winning the championship for the first time. Was it different for you lot? Because were you keeping an eye on what was happening down at Liverpool?
Yeah, I mean, it was surreal because it was like, oh, it was obviously a game in fast forward, that one, wasn't it, up there? And we were thinking, oh, Barker and Abbas are going to just bowl these lads out again. We're going to need that fourth batting point. Danny Briggs, you know, pulled off the inning, probably the innings of the year for us to get there. You know, it was phenomenal playing scoops and paddle sweeps and all sorts with every man on the fence and still finding the boundary. It was just ridiculous what he did. And then that gave us the momentum to go into the rest of the game. You know, when we bowled first time round, Somerset put up a proper fight and it was really, really difficult to bowl them out. And then, you know, the game sort of ebbed and flowed again. We got really quick runs. Will Rhodes plays probably the best innings he's played this year as well. You know, 60-odd off not many balls, maybe 40 balls with everyone on the fence. And then, you know, we came out to bowl knowing exactly what we had to do. We had to get 10 wickets in two sessions pretty much, you know, and we managed to do it. Especially when that last wicket went down, it's just, you know, it's like, mate, everyone's just over the moon, euphoria, you know, jumping around the circle, lads grabbing stumps, lads congratulating each other, fans chirping from the stands. It's just it's outstanding.
Now then, Lancashire's had about 24 hours to celebrate, and they did celebrate. I'm sure as a Yorkie, your heart breaks for them.
Devastated for them, yeah. to be fair, I was getting a lot of tweets, so I put a tweet out Friday morning saying, look, I can't promise we're going to win, but we'll give it everything we've got. And I got so many tweets from Lancashire fans saying, you got no chance, this, that, and that. I actually replied to one. I just put, wait till 5:30, mate, and then before you pipe up. But I got a lot of tweets from Yorkshire fans as well saying that they were Bears for a day and, you know, it wasn't, but you couldn't have a better feeling in sport, I don't think.
A bit on Robbo and Farby, because they left, you know, Robbo left the women's job and Farby left the England job to go and do director of cricket. And I wouldn't say it was a big gamble, but it's one of these two good, very, very good cricket men coming together and delivering a championship, while delivering the lads the best chance they possibly can to win the championship.
Yeah, you know what, I think Farby's signed quite shrewdly. Obviously myself and Briggsy coming in and, you know, a few of the lads that he's had in place from previous years, and then appointing Robbo as coach as well. Someone who's a bit more chilled, a bit more relaxed, just go out and play lads, just sort of frees you up and gives you that confidence just to go out and express yourself. And he's been pretty good all year as Robbo. It's only a couple of times, you know, where he's got a bit sort of flustered. And that one of those was yesterday afternoon. You know, we got a couple of dodgy LPs that we didn't get go our way, and his arms up in the air on the fence and stuff like that. But it was great to see, you know, it meant so much to him, as it did everyone. It was just a quality day and quality year that we've had. You know, a lot of it's down to those two.
Danny Briggs getting the fourth batting point in the last game with that 50 off 30 balls was an astonishing effort. But when you think back to all the way back to April and May, were there any other sort of moments that come to mind? You think, you know what, that could have been crucial as well.
Yeah, I think we've had moments like that all throughout the year. I remember Oliver Hannon-Dolby smashing a four in the 110th over to get another batting point back in the start of June, probably May. And that was a massive moment. You know, just contributions like that and bonus points that are crucial. You know, Danny Briggs, he absolutely played out of his skin the other day to get that fourth batting point, which basically put it in our hands. You know, the lads were absolutely buzzing after that, and the momentum that gave us to take into the second innings was huge.
How do you feel personally? You're 36 years young now, and you're far, far from the oldest person in the county championship. But this must be, well, is invigorating. Are you like raring to go? Are you going to, obviously you've got the Bob Willis Trophy final against Lancs. So you're not quite done yet, but how do you feel personally?
Yeah, massively. It's just the start of something for this team and this group of players. And I can see that. And, you know, I want to be a part of this for as long as it can last, hopefully next year. But, you know, this team gives me a lot of energy. You know, I give it a lot of experience for this team.
Can I ask you about Mo Ali? Obviously, and I'm going to ask you about the Ashes as well. Obviously, Mo's not going to be there. He's called time on his test career now. I know your international careers didn't overlap. You just missed each other. But what do you make of the speculation that the Ashes could be endangered because of Australia's quarantine rules? Would you tour?
It's difficult to say. So I'm not in that position. You know, I've not been in bubbles and all this sort of stuff. So, you know, I can't comment for the lads' mental well-being, but I can't imagine it's much fun. So, yeah, I can't really say whether I'm tour or not.
Brezzy, what about Mo? He's been a fantastic sum for England. I know you didn't play,
mate,
as Man has said, but you did play under-19s because I remember a seniors player, because obviously my younger brother's a similar age to you and Mo, and he played under-19s with you. He's a fantastic player. Is he... I always get annoyed when I talk about Mo because he feels like I'm not defending him, but this kid was a superstar. He's a fantastic cricketer for England.
Yeah, he has. You know, Mo is probably one of the most naturally gifted all-rounders that I've had the pleasure to see, really, see play live, bowl against in Arabia, which is, you know, bowling against him is quite a struggle. He dominates the top of off, you know, so fluent off the back foot and the front foot, and you know, if you bowl short, I mean, you're just going to get walloped. So, yeah, he's very difficult to bowl at. You know, he played a lot of test matches up front for England as a frontline spinner. And then he sort of lost a bit of form, came back in as a second spinner, but ended up being first spinner. It's just, you can't ever write him off.
And just to finish on the, on the Ashes, I know you're saying about bubble life and you've not been, but you're one of the last ones to win over there in Australia. England are going to need... as many of their big players to go over there to stand any chance of winning, because I think there is going to be an Ashes. It just depends on which 11 that do go over there. But it is very, very difficult to go over there and win without your big players.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're going to go over there and not send the best team that we've got available, then it sort of decredits the competition. It decredits the Ashes as a whole. So I'd be very wary of England doing that. I'd rather see it postponed than, you know, send the B team. That's probably my view on it, to be honest.
Well, the Bob Willis Trophy is underway while this programme goes out. I hope it goes well. You're looking forward to it? It must be. Exciting prospect.
Yeah, I mean, I love playing at Lords. Doesn't matter who against or who for, so I'm sure it's going to be a fantastic... And I mean, it's a five-day game, so there will be a result. Let's see what sort of wicket we get, but you know, it should be fantastic. Hope the weather stays kind.
Well, congratulations on the season. Enjoy the occasion.
Will do. Thank you.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. Still to come, we'll hear from Aussie legend Shane Warne. But next up, me and Harmy pick our county championship 11s of the season. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harleson. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the Following On feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. Right, we have a bit of fun now. Harmy and I have picked our 11s, there are a number of near misses as well. Hopefully we'll get the chance to give them a mention. We must tell the listeners that we have kept our 11s secret. So I genuinely don't know what your 11 is, and you don't know what my 11 is. So we're doing this live. I've got my 11 here, and it's really interesting to see how many crossovers we have. I'm going to run through our 11 straight away and then dissect why we chose them. My openers are Jake Libby and Adam Lythe. In the middle order, Kieran Carlson, David Beddingham, Josh Bohannon, and Chris Cook is keeping wicket for me. At number 7, I have Darren Stevens. At number 8, and I just want to say here that my criteria included only players qualified to play for England. So at 8, and my spinner might have been Simon Harmer, but I've actually gone for Danny Briggs. And then Sam Cook, Liam Norwell, and Luke Fletcher.
Well, I've gone slightly different. I must admit, I never thought about the Simon Harmer one. So I've actually got Simon Harmer in. But my 11 is Tom Haynes, Jake Libby, David Beddingham, Ollie Pope, that's it, Critchley from Derbyshire. I've got Darren Stevens, Chris Cook, Simon Harmer, Sam Cook, Luke Fletcher, and Chris Rushworth.
Very interesting. Look, okay, Jake Libby, he's a shoo-in, isn't he? I went for Adam Lythe to partner him because I wanted a right-hand, left-hand partnership. And also some experience, you know. Adam Lythe also offers you some dirty off breaks because I've got a left arm spinner. But he's just been consistent. He's only 34 years old. And I think I've always had a bit of a soft spot for him. I mean, he only averaged 39, over 800 runs. He scored some really important ones as well.
Yeah, he did. And I said right at the very start of the season, if England had a struggle with their openers, the one I would go back to, who from an experience point of view, would be Adam Lythe. But I look at Tom Haynes. I look at Sussex, where I really struggled with a wicketkeeper. And I looked at Sussex, and Sussex have had a season from first-class point of view where they were in bottom went after 10 games, and they were bottom of Division 3 after the extra four. They didn't create many chances to give a lot of young kids a shot at being first-class cricketers. We mentioned many times on here about the age and the average age of their side. But Tom Haynes, I think he's got something. I really do. I think he's got something that I think England might look at and explore. He got 1,176 runs as an opener in a really struggling side, averaging 47. I just went for Haynes over Lythe, going back to Robson. Hill at Leicester had a good season. Opening batsmen. So they were my sort of five or six that were the front runners. But my two openers were Jake Libby from Worcester and Tom Haynes from Sussex.
Libby, by the way, scored over 1,000 runs at 56 and a half with 400s and 450s. All right, 3-4-5. Kieran Carlson, just really like what he seems to be made of. 928 runs at 40, almost 49. David Beddingham, I think he's a shoo-in, wasn't he? First man to 1,000 runs, averages 60 and a half. And Josh Bohannon, I'm convinced, will play for England. He's only 24 years old. Amazing season, 850 runs at 53. But his career average is 46. I mean, he's quality for me.
Yeah, he is. He's a good player. And I found myself trying to find players that we're in the top, we're in the business area, because we've spoken this subject matters many times in the last 4 weeks about does the conference system work? Are we playing dead rubber games? Are players getting runs when there's less pressure on? I was trying to get my players in that had scored runs in the first 10 games who had done well to get their teams into the business section. But when I looked at my middle order, Beddingham, yes, you're right, he's a shoe-in. He's been leading run scorer for the majority of this county championship season. The anomaly one is Ollie Pope. I just felt as though I had to pick him. I know he got a big double 100 in the last game, probably a dead rubber game, but Ollie Pope averaged 78. He got nearly 900 runs, 860 runs, and only 13 innings for Surrey. He probably should have been playing a lot more for England, but I still, when I look at them numbers, they're good, they're proper numbers. They're, you know, the exceptional numbers. And Matt Critchley, who I think he's had another fantastic season, both with bat and with ball. He's had 26 innings, exactly 1,000 championship runs this year, an average of 43. And he's got 32 wickets at an average of 37. So I've gone with Critchley in the middle order. You had to pick Darren Stevens. He's 45-year-old, but you had to pick Darren Stevens. You look at his numbers. He averaged 43 with the bat in 18 innings, 650 runs. And he got 40 wickets and averaging 18. No matter if he's 45 or not. You know, that's good numbers from all-round department. Other ones in the frame for me, Ryan Higgins, from an all-rounder point of view. 50 wickets again. I thought another fantastic season for Ryan Higgins. I could have gone with Bahana, yes, I agree. Young Brooke at Yorkshire, who had a decent enough season, averaging 38. Joe Clark, consistently, we got 5 650s and 100. Somebody else we've had on the Cricket Collective and done well, Sam Hearn, who played for Warwickshire, who won the county championship. But my 3, 4, 5, 6 or the batsman in that was, I thought was, for me, was Beddingham, Pope, Critchley and Darren Stevens.
Yeah, Critchley and Higgins, definitely very, very close. They're on my near miss list. The other criteria that I put on myself, apart from being English qualified, is that I wasn't going to pick test players. And that's the only reason Ollie Pope doesn't get into my team. You know, he was playing international cricket as well. But yeah, absolutely. It was just I must say, I'm not amiss to being sentimental. But, you know, there's nothing sentimental about the choice of Darren Stevens, as you said. Absolutely nothing. His numbers are ridiculous, as you said. I mean, 39 wickets at 18.5 and 650 runs at 43. You know, it's got nothing to do with sentiment. Where are we at? Where are we at now? Chris Cook's my keeper. Who was your keeper again?
Yeah, Chris Cook was my keeper. I really struggled on this one, Manners. I didn't want to put Ollie Pope in as a keeper, and that devalues the wicket-keeping role as such from picking the best players. I looked at, if it had gone on the first 10 games, James Bracey was a shoe-in. I thought he had a good start until he got picked for England and then had a little bit of struggle, and I can understand that because he's a young man and he'll come back stronger. Tom Moores was another one. He'd got a lot of dismissals, but from a runs point of view, didn't get the volume of runs that probably that Cook got or Bracey got. And the one that I probably wanted to pick, but I just brought myself, I couldn't pick two players from Sussex who finished bottom of the log. And that was Ben Brown. Ben Brown got 970 runs, average of 51. But he only got 26 dismissals in 15 innings, largely down to probably not creating as many chances because the team that he was playing in. So that's a bit unfair on Ben, but he's had a good season. But for me, I went with Chris Cook. You know, 816 runs, an average of nearly 60. And 41 dismissals in 23 innings. For me, he just pipped James Bracey.
All right, so you've got the all-rounder, a spinner and three seamers. Let's go with your spinner. I Danny Briggs for me, I mean, it would have been Simon Harmer, as I said, had I not imposed that criteria. But and it wasn't just for the 50 that Briggs scored on the penultimate day to pick up the fourth batting point for Warwickshire, which allowed them to go on to win the title. I mean, he's better than that. He's had a very, very tidy season. 30 wickets at 22. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. And he took them at important times as well. You know, there were no freebies or cheapies out there. He didn't pick up fifers on dust tracks. And you want some runners, some runs from your spinner, and he scored over 400 of them at 27 and a half.
Yeah, and I picked Simon Harmer. I never thought about the non-English selection. I think Simon Harmer's had a fantastic season for Essex, as is Danny Briggs. And we've just spoke about Mo and Ali, haven't we? And about where's England's next cab? And is there a spinner out there waiting to chuck his hand in the air and say, right, pick me for Australia? And the Ashes that is coming up. Young Parkinson at Leicestershire. He got 50 wickets. So he's had a good season. But I couldn't get away from Simon Harmer, as much as you didn't want an English, non-English player picked in the County Championship 11. I think Simon Harmer's had another great season, and it just shows you how good that kid is. And, you know, a shame from all South Africans that he's not playing in his own country and playing international cricket, because he's probably at a level where he probably should be challenging to play international cricket, because if he was English, he'd be in the Ashes squad.
Right, 9, 10, 11. Sam Cook for me. You know what? I might be, with apologies to my three frontline seamers, I might be sacrificing out-and-out pace, but there isn't, you know, a massive amount of that around. So Sam Cook, 58 wickets for Essex at 14.4. Liam Norwell, I thought we needed a bear in the team just to acknowledge their championship status. And also 49 wickets at 18. And, you know, I do, as you know, Harmy, I've got this pet hate about people being applied with labels that are irrelevant. And I know Luke Fletch is a big man and might not look like your average cricketer, but, you know, he's taken 66 wickets at under 15. I mean, so the other thing is, you know, clearly this game, we're not picking this team to go out and play on a flat track in Perth. You know, well, I mean, I'm expecting there to be a bit of grass on it, and you want county cricketers who know how to exploit conditions. Well, Luke Fletcher's 66 wickets at under 15.
He's unbelievable. He's had a fantastic season. And, you know, we've had him on the Cricket Collective, as well as Chris Rushworth and Darren Stevens. And there'll be eyebrows raised at Stevens and Fletcher's selection. But you're right, we're picking him on 14 championship cricket matches, who have played the best cricket, or we feel as though have played the best cricket. The numbers don't lie. They've contributed for their teams. Luke Fletcher, potentially, if it wasn't for Joe Root being unbelievable this season in Test Match cricket, Luke Fletcher would be the PCA Cricketers Player of the Year. He would be, because I think everybody else that's nominated for it probably just come in third and fourth. So, yeah, for me, Luke Fletcher, he gets in. He's a great kid. He's somebody who doesn't shy away from the responsibilities of going out there first up and putting teams under pressure. What I will say, and this is not anything sort of to tone down anything he's done this year, he got to play with Stuart Broad for a large proportion of the early part of the season. And I just wonder if that early part of the season, when you get on the roll and the momentum goes, it stays with you when Stuart went. And I don't mean that in any derogatory way at all. I think what Stuart probably did to Notts early part of the season was set standards that they adhered to for the rest of the season. And I think Luke Fletcher's has carried on what he's done. And he mentioned that in an interview when we spoke to him on the Cricket Collective. Rushworth, again, another banker, another fantastic season again for Durham. 59 wickets, Durham wickets getting flatter now. And Young Cook is up for player the Young Player of the Year, PCA Young Player of the Year. Yes, we've not got blistering pace, but when you look at the numbers that they've got, the seasons that they've had for their counties, I'm quite happy with my three seamers going on a wicket, which, if I'm coaching, I'm at home, I'm saying to my groundsman, just leave a little bit of grass on that, because I think this might be a handful for their opposition batsmen against Fletcher, Rushworth and Young Cook.
I must say, to put Rushworth and Fletcher in a bag and pick one of them out blindfolded, I'd be perfectly happy with either of them in my county 11. All right, let's recap our 11s before we go into the break. Jake Libby, Adam Lyth, Kieran Carlson, David Beddingham, Josh Bohannon, Chris Cook, Darren Stevens, Danny Briggs, Sam Cook, Liam Norwell, Luke Fletcher.
And mine, Tom Hearns of Sussex, Jake Libby of Worcester, David Benningham at 3 of Durham, Ollie Pope, Surrey, number 4, Matt Critchley at number 5 from Derbyshire, Kent's Darren Stevens at number 6, Glamorgan's Chris Cook at number 7 and wicketkeeper, and then the bowlers, number 8, Simon Harmer from Essex, Sam Cook from Essex, number 10, Luke Fletcher from Notts, and number 11, Chris Rushworth from Durham.
And it's time now to hear from Aussie legend Shane Warne, who's told TalkSport that he'll be disappointed if some or many of the England players pull out of this winter's Ashes tour. Let's hear what he had to say.
What I've heard is that England have been given a resort for their 14-day quarantine, swimming pool, golf course, everything for their families. Surely that's a holiday for 2 weeks, not quarantine. So if they can take their families there, have a resort, go to swim, have a swim, play golf. So if they can do all that, then hopefully we'll have the full-strength England team out there for the Ashes series. I'd be disappointed if any of the players pulled out because they can have their families there. They've got a resort there for a holiday. And then from then, you know, you play the cricket. You know, it's an Ashes series. It's an Ashes series. It's the biggest cricket tournament, you know, cricket series in the world. So, you know, I'd be disappointed if any of the England players pulled out because I don't know why they'd be pulling out. There's a lot of people I'm sure would want to play in an Ashes series. You know, you define your career and what you do in an Ashes series for an Australian or an English person. So, English player. So, you know, I'd be disappointed if anyone pulled out. I think going to a resort for 2 weeks and having a swim in the pool, playing golf and hanging with your family for two weeks doing your quarantine. Yeah. A lot of us have had to do it a lot harder than that, the quarantine, and then play cricket in front of crowds. Hopefully that'll all go ahead.
Well, homie, to be fair, that doesn't sound too bad, does it? I mean, some of those resorts on the Gold Coast... In Australia's Queensland are very, very pleasant. There's some fabulous golf courses. And do you know what? 2 weeks, I mean, it might just be a little bit too comfortable with your families and be able to play golf.
Yeah, you take your family away to a golfing complex is defeating the object, really, isn't it? So asking your missus, can I go and play golf now? I think there's a lot more in this. I think there's a lot more in this that we don't know about. I think there's a lot more in this that the players have got anxiety. I'm not going to sort of be quick to criticise, harshly judge anybody that makes decision either way until we know the full facts. Are the players' families allowed to cross borders? Because, you know, it's all right, well and good saying, right, you've got 14 days to quarantine in a golf court, on a golfing complex, or swimming pools and everything like that. But if you're going from Brisbane to Adelaide, Adelaide to Perth, Perth to Melbourne, Melbourne to Sydney, and your families can't go, well, what's the point of going in the first place? Because if the families can't cross borders. And there was an interesting spot. I'd love to sort of take claim for this next comments, but it was an interesting thing that Martin Bicknell said on social media to Kevin Peterson. Kevin Peterson was, as Kev usually is, you know, forthright with his opinion, telling everybody that the bubble should be gone and players have had enough of them and got to be, that's it, history. I agree with that. But then Martin Bicknell came back with an interesting point. And I know where he's coming from because I went through this. And he's like, well, the Ashes Tour is not for England players' families. The Ashes Tour is for 17 England players to go and play Australia. I remember, and I can be forthright with this opinion because I've been through it. I've done an Ashes tour where I had a child born in the middle of it and didn't come home for it, wasn't allowed to come home, did the whole Ashes trip without my family. You know, players got theirs at Christmas. I went without. Nah. I was there to do a job, and that's what these players are doing. I fully understand the anxieties of where these players are because of the bubble life that they've been in or that they're in. But I think there's a lot more complications than just Shane Warne saying, let's just, you know, you've got to get on with it. It's 14 days in a golfing complex and you've got on a nice swimming pool and all that. I still think there's a little bit more to it. But I do agree with what some of the older players will say of the opinion of, well, an Ashes trip is 5 test matches. Your family's only ever come for 2 weeks over Christmas and New Year. And that was back in my time, even times, you know, before and after that. So where has the families need to be there from day one come from? Is something, are the players trying to hide something that, you know, they don't want to make a tough decision on and basically say, we don't want to be going. people pulling out from that. So there's a lot more to ride on this, to run on this, I think. But I can categorically say what I feel is that, yeah, I would back any England player who doesn't want to go because that's their right. I still think there should be consequences after that by getting their place back in the side if somebody goes over and does well. That's their choose. There'll be an England team that does go over there, and you're going over there to do a job, not going over for a holiday with your family.
Yeah, Boris Johnson's attempt to intervene resulted in a there will be no special deals for England's cricketers from Australia's Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. I mean, I think it's important not to judge. As you said, you know, it's up to each and individual player. But if they decide not to go, don't judge. You know, unless you've lived inside a hard biosecure bubble, which I had my first experience of recently, and it wasn't pleasant at all. You know, you're restricted to one floor of the hotel for 3 weeks. But I would find it quite hard to swallow if somebody said they didn't want to go to the Ashes, but then went to an expanded IPL for 3 months.
Absolutely, 100% behind that. And I think we've seen some of England players pull out of this IPL in the UAE, you know, the likes of Wokes and Bairstow. They're probably getting themselves geared up and ready to go and take on Australia. I don't think there'll be too many pull out of the Ashes, I must admit. I think there's a lot of hot air going around at this minute in time of speculation and what and wherefore. I still think the ECB need to be clearer to, not to us, but I think the players need to know exactly what's happening. And they need to know quickly, and they need to make a decision quickly by saying, right, this is the terms and conditions of the contract that you're going to sign to go to Australia. Are you going or are you not? And it's simple as that for me. And then when you are going, you're going to do a job. We're going to play the best cricket we possibly can. So let's just wait and see. It's hard to judge on what's happening. I think we get to, when is it, 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks time when everything sort of needs to be picked. I think we judge that when we get there.
Confirmation, Harmy, changing subject, that there will be a one-off test match between India and England next summer. No clarity on whether it will be a conclusion to the series or whether it'll just be a standalone test match. I feel quite strongly about that. I mean, sport, elite sport particularly, is about the competition. It's about winning and losing, you know, ultimately. And if it's just a once-off standalone test match, well, India might as well just hand a check over. You know what? It's cost you £40 million. Here's a check. And I don't care if it's a year later. So what? I want to see this series concluded. I want to see England have a chance to square it 2-2.
Absolutely. 100% behind you on that one. And I think that's what should happen. If it's a standalone test match, are we going to see India send a B-side? You know, they sent a B-side to Sri Lanka to play again at the same time as their test team is over here. We're fortunate that we have got India over in England at the time, but that's not their test side. That's their one-day side. So are we going to get a test match conclusion with one-day players? But I'm with you. This series needed a conclusion. And at the minute, for me, it's still open. It's still up in the air. And India are still 1-0 up. 2-1 up, sorry, going into the last test match.
And final word, and I believe this is a positive thing. Following on from the Azeem Rafiq racism inquiry at Yorkshire, our colleague Mark Butcher made an absolutely brilliant programme on Sky called You Guys Are History and the difficulties with racial prejudice that many England players had in the early days of their careers. And just recently, Gloucestershire apologised to David Sid Lawrence for some racial prejudice that he suffered at the beginning of his career. And you know what? If anybody's uncomfortable about the game acknowledging these issues in the past, well, just consider the amount of discomfort that the actual victims of racial prejudice suffered during their careers. And I think it's a really, really good thing. And I know the game will be a better place for acknowledging the serious errors of the past.
Yeah, and we can't change what's happened in the past, but boy, can we learn from it. And boy, can we make not just cricket, but sport and society a better place for that. The programme that Butch did on the TV was brilliant. And I urge anybody, all cricket lovers, even sports lovers that hasn't seen it, go to Sky and get and watch, because it is. There's some harrowing stories. There's some stories of ridiculous abuse. And Gloucester has, you know, come out and, you know, has apologised to one of their England players, one of their superstars, in David Sid Lawrence, about, you know, trying to make the world a better place. And I think that's the key to all this, all these inquiries, all the noise that Mark Butcher and Michael Holden has tried to, you know, tried to shout from the rooftops that, yes, we've had enough, but we want to make society better. And I think little things can go a long way, and just changing one person's mentality, is the world a better place? Of absolutely course it is. So well done for acknowledging that. Well done to Butch and the team for producing this great program. We are going to hear more stories. Undoubtedly, we're going to hear more stories, because, you know, society 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago wasn't a great place. But it's about how we get better from this. And because Gloucester apologised, because the inquiries are making the world a better place, that can only be great for our sport.
Absolutely. You've been listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. If you missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back at the same time next week. Thanks for listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.